You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Purpose Effect, Building Meaning in Yourself, Your Role, and Your Organization by Dan Pontefract. Last show, we were looking at the chapter, Not on Purpose. In his 2005 paper entitled, quote, Has Financial Development Made the World Riskier, unquote, former economic counselor and director of research at the International Monetary Fund, Raghuram G. Rajan, chillingly foresaw the financial collapse that would follow 3 years later. He wrote, quote, if firms today are implicitly selling various kinds of default insurance to goose up returns, what happens if catastrophe strikes? Will they start defaulting on obligations to policymakers and pensioners precisely when such protection is most needed, unquote? Rajan was spot on. Much of the financial meltdown that began in the fall of 2008 was predicated on an unhealthy appetite of greed by investors, insurance brokers, and executives of banking institutions. So too, a zombie-like penchant for risk combined with a blatant disregard for societal well-being was rampant. It was profit for the sake of profit. Interestingly, financial incentives, particularly those aimed at the investors, were his biggest worry. He wrote, quote, changes in the financial sector have altered managerial incentives, which in turn have altered the nature of risks undertaken by the system. As we now know, those incredible incentive packages of investors, brokers, and executives made millions for a few, but put thousands out of work simultaneously. This lack of organizational purpose, this disregard for society itself, led to a loss of more than 8.8 million jobs in the United States alone, and over 900,000 jobs in the United Kingdom, and nearly 450,000 in Canada. According to the World Bank, over 25 million migrant workers in China were laid off directly because of the financial crisis. If the investors, brokers, and executives of financial institutions were able to get away with millions of dollars in compensation in return for pushing society to the brink of financial ruin, do we find it eerily similar that investors, brokers, executives, and lobbyists continue to wreak havoc by a form of induced stock market volatility for purposes of gaming the system to create individual wealth? On the topic of shareholder gains and the current state of Wall Street, William Lasnik, an economist, noticed this dilemma in a 2014 paper, Harvard Business Review article, where he wrote, quote, corporate profitability is not translating into widespread economic prosperity. Trillions of dollars that could have been spent on innovation and job creation in the U.S. economy over the past three decades have instead been used to buy back shares for what effectively was stock price manipulation. Has the myopic quest for profit, if not profiteering, become a symptom of failure, a failure to create the purpose effect? Next, let us investigate even further evidence, the concepts of power, performance, and role that also work to prevent the sweet spot from ever being realized. Chapter 4, Purpose Mismatch. Continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is the key to unlocking our potential. Lina Cordes. Power consists in one's capacity to link his will with the purpose of others, to lead by reason and a gift of cooperation. Woodrow Wilson. In October 2012, at the age of 52 years, Linz Ridding of Auckland, New Zealand, died of inoperable esophageal cancer. Prior to his battle, he was the owner and operator of a small animation and art studio called the Department of Motion Graphics. The firm specialized in designing and crafting unique, high-quality motion graphics and animation solutions. Prior to starting the business, Linz worked at large advertising agencies such as BBDO and Satachi as art director. His entire 30-year career had been spent serving the advertising industry in one way or another. In March of 2012, taking stock of his life, career, and the inevitability of his own death, Linz wrote a 3,000-word essay on his blog entitled A Short Lesson in Perspective. He started by focusing on what he referred to as the overnight test. When working on an advertising project, he and his colleagues would spend hours coming up with ideas, pinning each of them on the board for viewing. The next day, and not at the moment of ideation, the team would decide which options to put forward to a client. In his post, Linz lamented the modern corporation's quest for profit maximization and regretted that the patience required by the overnight test was rarely to be witnessed in such organizations. The overnight test only works if you can afford to wait overnight, wrote Linz. But his essay went much deeper. The chilling, reflective feedback did not solely focus on the profit-only mindset of the corporation. He set his sights on the people who do work in the organization too, including himself. My old life looks and feels very different from the outside, he began. It turns out I didn't actually like my old life nearly as much as I thought I did. Linz was dying. Perhaps it was the state of contemplativeness that urged him to write about his career. It was a career he was not at all happy with. I think I've come to the conclusion that the whole thing was a bit of a con, a scam, an elaborate hoax. He opines, Linz believed his entire education and experience actually set himself up for an epic act of self-deceit. Countless late nights and weekends, holidays, birthdays, school recitals, and anniversary dinners were willingly sacrificed at the altar of some intangible but infinitely worthy higher cause, he recounted. It would all be worth it in the long run, he believed. But this myopia and fixation on the role, his performance, and the rigidity that accompanied his behavior was like a career Ponzi scheme. He had convinced himself that sacrificing time from his life to work for the glory of his career and firms was dutiful. It was necessary. In hindsight, Linz believed it wasn't really important, or of any consequence at all, really. How could it be? Were we just shifting product? Towards the conclusion of the essay, Linz asks, so was it worth it? His answer cut to the heart of the matter. Well, of course not. It turns out it was just advertising. There was no higher calling. Eventually, Linz wonders if his 30-year professional existence was a sham. He closes the post by writing, as a life, it all seemed like such a good idea at the time. I'm not really sure my life passes the overnight test. The story of Linz Redding ought to be a wake-up call for both individuals and the organization. Individuals who believe their purpose in life is solely tied to their role at work may be in for a rude awakening when a life event or organizational downsizing incident occurs. Our roles and careers are important, but they should not be considered the role-identifying factors that define us. When an organization creates an opening culture rife with power, a lack of caring or unethical behaviors, it becomes an accomplice in disengagement. The organization becomes a contributing factor in the creation of unfulfilled lives. No one deserves to die feeling their work was a sham. That is, the organization can be thought of as partially culpable for scenarios like that of Linz Redding. This chapter focuses on three additional symptoms that prevent the purpose effect from ever materializing. They are role, power, and performance. The first issue we will tackle here is role. Role. Paul J. Zak, a neuroeconomist at Claremont Graduate University, is the author of The Moral Molecule. He developed a theory known as the UF factor. Paul's model centered on organizational design and suggests that team members' level of joy in their role has a casual and direct relationship to both trust and purpose. In simpler terms, trust times purpose equals joy. The O of O factor plays homage to oxytocin. What Paul believes and proves in his research is the chemical foundation for trusting others. He writes, trust can be raised by implementing policies explicitly designed to empower and engage employees. Paul indicates if levels of trust are raised in an organization such that team members feel as though they are allowed to do good in their roles, then they possess the incentives and resources to perform better, boosting organizational performance. Maybe team members are on a constant quest to achieve joy in their roles, but that quest often comes up against various inhibitors and conflicting attitudes or behaviors regarding what type of responsibility or autonomy the individual has in the role itself. In 1957, Stanford University researcher Leon Festinger coined the term cognitive dissonance, referring to a human being's search to achieve internal balance, harmony, and consistency among the conflicts and factors that get in the way. Cognitive dissonance may sound more academic than trying to achieve joy in their role at work, but what it may boil down to is the team member's general sense of worth in their role. If there was no worth, it may be the result of a lack of alignment between personal, organizational, and role purpose. It may sour the chance for the sweet spot. Without purpose, trust, or joy in a team member's role, and with cognitive dissonance perpetually lurking, a team member has to feel value and worth in their role for the purpose effect to materialize. In fact, UK-based Calixia Pro found that 49% of all workers were so unhappy in their role that they believed their career choice was a mistake. A further 24% were so disillusioned that they admitted to describing themselves as poor workers. Sanjay Singla, an entrepreneur based in Washington, D.C., did not feel value in his role as an investment banker and financial modeler. He decided to take matters into his own hands instead of hoping for purpose to surface magically or fall from the sky. Sanjay calls himself a serial creative, an individual who happily can work on almost anything in almost any field, so long as he's creating something real and of lasting value. He is well educated also, earning a master's degree in management science and engineering, along with a bachelor's degree in economics from Stanford University. The various roles he held after graduating, however, were not doing much to help him achieve the purpose effect. What happens to many people in Sanjay's shoes is that they remain in their role and misery begins to compound. This is especially true when the direct leader of team members like Sanjay are ill-equipped to nurture environments or roles where worth and value are appreciated. All of this aids the alarming statistics of continued working disengagement, dissatisfaction, and disaffection. But Sanjay is not about just to become a statistic. During an interview, he said, quote, "I find the idea of being responsible for some change in the world truly captivating. The idea of closing my eyes 10 years from now and smiling at the fact that people are being helped directly because of what I have built." Quote, he wanted to ensure that there was value in his role. However, that may be, I don't want to be separated from the excitement, he continues, of the creation and execution, as most employees at larger companies must do. I want to spend my life advising others on what to do and their great achievements. This captivation I'm talking about is compelling, and one I believe is worth a career's effort. It was Sanjay's recognition that a purposeful role was not going to materialize if he continued working in these soulless jobs and operating environments. I believe the emphasis now is for people to navigate themselves by making good, disciplined, mature decisions, he said. Part of this means being well-adjusted, having self-esteem, showing temperance, and working on projects that add something good to the world. As long as we live among unclear pathways, people have to educate and invest themselves to become mature actors. After carefully thinking about what brings him sense of purpose, joy, and value, Sanjay left the traditional form of working and started a company called Apply.co. He helps other individuals with their job-seeking wishes in addition to assisting organizations with their hiring needs. He concluded our interview by suggesting, quote, people need to strive to become the best version of themselves, unquote. Disengagement will continue to be a problem if a team member's role at work does not contain opportunities to create value or they have not recognized for their efforts. Further, if a leader does not choose to create a trusting environment, one where team members might achieve purpose in their role and a sense of value while working, it is possible cognitive dissonance will overpower the three categories of purpose and they might never align.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC. But it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF, 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book, The Purpose Effect, Building Meaning in Yourself, Your Role, and Your Organization by Dan Pontefract. Power. In his book, Power, Why Some People Have It and Others Don't, author and Stanford University professor Jeffrey Pfeffer writes the following, quote, "Not being able to control one's environment produces feelings of helplessness and stress, and being stressed or out of control can harm your health. So being in a position with low power and status is indeed hazardous to your health. And conversely, having power and the control that comes with it prolongs life," unquote. Prof. Feller's thesis is provocative. Some individuals will demonstrate both blind strength and deceptively forceful elements of power while trying to accomplish goals and objectives. It is the workplace equivalent of the political arena, first observed by Henry Mintzberg, management author and McGill University professor. The more power an individual obtains, the more power they're able to yield. The more strength an individual acquires, the further they can flex their muscles. An analogy might be government. Take, for example, a Democrat in a Republican-controlled House of Representatives or a conservative in a liberal-majority parliament. It is nearly impossible to change laws or institute new programs because you do not possess power in which to do so. Through his years of consulting and teaching, Profeller argues that team members in today's organizations have an unrealistic expectation and thus understanding of what it takes and to make people more successful than others. Power, as Pfeffer states, is extremely helpful. But if the individual thinks life in the workplace is supposed to be fair all the time, a just world phenomena, myth as he defines it, then it leaves the team member with a false representation of how one's career can truly prosper. Throughout my career and life, I have seen pitfalls of power. As an example, let me share a story about the establishment of sales quotas. The individuals' names and organizations have been removed to protect identities. Imagine you are a sales executive covering a particular territory selling a unique but popular software product. And as the new fiscal year draws closer, you are handed an annual target for the next year. Nothing new here. The target has been created at the vice president level. It is handed down to the regional vice president, who in turn sends it down to the territory director, who in turn passes it on to you, the sales account executive. Right or wrong, any sales team will confirm that this is often the process. However, here is the rub. In this particular example, the target is unattainable. Why? The unique yet popular software product that you are selling is already in the hands of 90% of the customers in the territory that you are serving. Even if you manage to convince the remaining 10% of the customer base to switch over and purchase the software product, you would only ever achieve 50% of your quota. Despite querying the target with senior management, it remains in place unobtainable, and the prospect of annual sales-based commissions out of reach. This story demonstrates how rigid, power-based hierarchical thinking can have a detrimental impact on an individual's personal and role-based purpose. The individual in question has since moved on to a different high-tech company headquartered in Silicon Valley. He enjoyed his role and team at the former organization, but this illustration of power forced him to move on, to feel less like a number on a headcount spreadsheet. His personal sense of purpose was being compromised in a role he used to enjoy through an organization that actually used to demonstrate purpose. It is this breakdown in the relationship between organizational role self that can cause high-performing team members to flee for more purposeful pastures. We can also learn a few lessons from the corporate ashes of Nortel, a telecommunications and data networking equipment manufacturer headquartered in Canada that speaks to the relationship of rigidity to power. At its peak in the year 2000, Nortel employed more than 94,000 employees worldwide, was the ninth most valuable company in the world at over $300 billion, and held more than one-third of the total value of the Savings and Poor TSX stock exchanges. In other words, it was a very successful company, if those are generally accepted measures. If we fast forward a few years, Nortel never convalesced and ultimately withered away. As in this case, within some organizations that go belly up, a rigid operating culture took root in the management ranks of Nortel. A blindness and inability to reshape its purpose were arguably its undoing. Researchers from the University of Ottawa spent 3 years interviewing numerous ex-employees, partners, customers, analysts, and members of the media. They discovered evidence of arrogance, rigidity, and a lack of resilience, particularly at the senior leadership level. The researchers wrote, quote, "Nortel's rigid culture played a defining role in the company's inability to react to industrial changes." Respondents suggested that this lack of adaptability was partially based on the company's history as a leader in the market, unquote. They further identified a fixation on power and a disrespect of budgeting as the root cause of the company's extinction. By increasing divisional power among its various lines of businesses, Nortel effectively became an organization that had increased internal policies and fruitless competition. Perhaps the upper echelons of senior management shifted the organization's purpose to become one fixated on rigidity, fiefdoms, and silos, instead of one that thrived on innovation, collaboration, and engagement. There were other factors that led to the demise of Nortel, including a dramatically changing business environment that the company never adjusted to, poorly conceived management ideas, misaligned corporate strategy, executives' penchant for status quo thinking. The highly engaged culture that was once Nortel turned into one of infighting and rigidity. The lead researcher of the report, Jonathan Keloff, said, quote, "Nortel's employees had a loyalty to the company and to customers that was hard to match," unquote. Keloff found ex-Nortel workers really longed for its original culture and environment where the people were the most positive factor captured in the study, and that their commitment, energy, determination, and personal sacrifices resulted in incredible competencies and technologies that still permeate. What was once an organization thriving on purpose, enabled by a workforce equally demonstrating role purpose, was decimated by power, control, and corporate blindness. We're going to be looking at how successful companies like Nortel have failed because of their lack of purpose in future shows. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week. We'll be right back.
CJSF.